Type Radio. Now we are talking.
Hello, this is Type Radio.
Hello, this is Type Radio.
My name is Erik van Blokland.
My name is Justin Rossum, and now we're talking.
Now we're talking.
Is it difficult to stop? I mean, because you can keep...
No, that's not hard to stop. I mean,
it's very clear
sometimes
when things are done.
We very often write a bit of code for specific projects, and then it only has to do that particular thing, and once the product ships or whatever, it's done. And usually when we visit that code years later, it doesn't even work anymore because it's different versions of certain components or something. We have lots of old dead code that we simply cannot get to run anymore. But that's actually okay. I mean,
bit rot.
Old code dies.
Dead code, that's quite a nice name.
Bit rot, yeah. That's
sounds very dramatic.
No, it's a very slow process.
Lift your keyboard, damn!
Another bit fell out.
Yeah.
It's a gray dust that you find underneath your computer.
Yeah, it's inside, when you open the door, dead bits.
But that's the same basically. I must have a box somewhere at home with old floppy disks. With probably lots, even if those floppy disks are still readable, if the magnetic material didn't deteriorate already, there are Quark Express documents on there, of Quark 1.0, from maybe 1988 or something. I'm pretty sure I cannot find a machine now and a copy of the last version of Quark that actually could read that particular format. So, yeah. Those designs are just gone. I mean, with code, it basically works similarly. And that's basically the reason why real code for real software that many people use is never finished. You always have to maintain stuff.
But isn't it essential that the code is being used over and over again and changed and altered, and that sort of keeps it alive?
For software that actually ships to other people and that use it, then yeah, you have to make a sort of commitment.
Well, it's regular maintenance. If you do it regularly, if you go to the dentist every year, then you know the problems will remain small and overseeable. And if you stretch it out and forget about it, and at some point you run into a problem, you'll notice that several of the small problems have compounded into something big that might not be worth to solve it anymore. That's an evolutionary thing in code, I suppose. It's stuff that you do use. It's not that you maintain all of these things, just you want to have it available. So you maintain the things that you can afford the time or you need. And say, okay, well, I can spend this afternoon fixing this up because I need it. And the code you don't need, you just forget about it. And the successful stuff will survive and the other stuff will... It's very Darwinistic.
So we don't need a mortuary for old code. Is there a museum for that? I mean, is there like a storage place?
It's called Windows.
There are all these websites for old computers, though. So, and also, yeah, like.
Well, I do know a guy, and he's connected to Montevideo in Amsterdam, and he's maintaining every system from the Mac.
Uh-huh.
From like very early on. So if you have software.
Yeah, what I was saying earlier about Express, Quark Express, of course, there will be someone in the world with a machine from that era which runs the correct version of Quark Express, but it's
the investment needed to make it work increases. Like you have to find a machine, you have to find the right version of operating system, you have to find a floppy drive, you have to find a SCSI cable. Like all these things will just add up. And then
that's the interesting thing about open standards or relatively open standards. Like PostScript was developed by Adobe as a very commercial product, but they from the beginning they would ship books that would document how the PostScript language works. It's a programming language really that is used on many kinds of laser printers. But there have been some revisions in the PostScript language, but still an old PostScript program from 1988 is quite likely to be, somehow you can probably still converted to PDF now with Acrobat Distiller or something. I mean,
but with the Quark document, which is the format is not described. You don't know how it's worked. It's all binary stuff. You need the application, and for the application, you need the operating system.
It's gone. It's almost impossible to reverse engineer. Apparently, people are reverse engineering the file formats of MS Word, every time a new version comes out, they keep up with that, because there are open source applications running on Mac or Linux that would like to be able to at least import. They don't want to really work with those formats, but you need to be able to import it. Well, so these things need to be to be reverse engineered. And in the case of Quark, it was always, I don't know what it's like these days, I haven't used Quark in years. It was just, they made it intentionally hard to reverse engineer. At some point I tried, I had a, there was a new version coming out, 3.11 or something, and first the English version came out, the English language version, the American version, and I was working in Germany at the time for Eric Spiekerman, and we were using this, some new features, and it was really cool. And then it turned out, well, this was for a brochure to be set in German, and the English version wouldn't hyphenate German. And then, so okay, then the German version came out just right on time, so we could finish this project we're working on in the German version. Then it turned out that if you would open the one created in the English version in the German version, it would still not hyphenate the German. So then I tried, well, I'm going to try and reverse engineer this. So in the English version, I created an empty document, A4, with fixed set of margins, same preferences and everything, saved that file, did the exact same thing in the German version. I thought, I'm just going to compare the bytes of those two files. They were completely different. They just intentionally make it different or something. So it's, I mean, for a long time, Adobe Illustrator would work with some sort of simplified PostScript, and it were always basically text files. You could drop an Adobe Illustrator file just onto a text editor or BB editor or whatever, and you could see the code there. And lots of it you couldn't immediately understand, or you wouldn't even want to, but say a global find and replace of search for one font, replace it with another in times where the applications didn't have such a feature, you would just open up those files in a text editor, find, replace, and poof, you have all your fonts changed in this one document. Right, right, right. It's just a wonderful thing. How clever. Did we get to this subject? I mean, I doubt the Type Radio
you don't
audience
want to talk about open source
I found that like a mortuary for their old code.
Right.
I thought that triggered it.
Yeah.
Are you competitive?
Yeah.
Between each other?
Yeah, well, in a friendly way.
Oh yeah?
Football.
Yeah, I
no, suppose. I think that's with many people who work two by two, that's just what keeps you moving. Like, hey, I did this. Oh, hey, that's interesting. If I take that, I mean, I think the whole Beowulf idea started to as like bouncing off ideas. Like, hey, what if you could? And then we're digging into how PostScript works and fiddle about. I mean, that font, even though it's based on Eric's design, the base shapes of the letters are drawn by Eric. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have come about in this way had either of us tried to do that alone. So it's that's kind of like, yeah, because you're like basically trying to top each other. Hey, if you can do that, maybe we can do that. And hey, that's cool. Then you're just, yeah,
very symbiotic so relationship.
But it works. It works for a very, very particular kind of project. The project itself has to have the potential of doing these things. And I think we've picked up on things that we can do this way, and things where it's just another project. And
I think the application we wrote for our presentation is a pretty good example of this way of working. We don't do that all the time. We don't even work all that much together. We live in different cities. We have different clients, we do our own stuff, we have our different sources of income, and every now and then we get a commercial job where the client explicitly asks for us both together, and we go do that.
Well, the stamp project works.
Hmm? Yeah, exactly. That's the last commercial, but it's not like we're not every day together involved in commercial projects. And we talk to each other.
We're not partners in the design studios.
Very often. I keep saying, I mean, a long time ago when we were young, we were like, should we start a design studio together? And maybe, that's kind of cool. Let's not do that. I mean, it's just, and I think, I don't think it would have worked out. I mean, we're pretty different in many respects. We would have gotten in so big fights that I don't think we would have been talking together anymore. I've seen that happen so many times with people. Two good friends, let's start a company together. Yeah, cool.
But
and within a year, they don't talk anymore.
Or two.
So basically, you found like the perfect way to work together.
Yeah, to just also
whenever
not
you want to.
We don't. Yeah, exactly. We discuss many things, but I mean, yeah, the business. It's not really a business deal. It's just yeah. We really
compliment.
That's the word. Thank you, Lisa.
You could read his mind.
Yeah. Maybe you guys should start it.
Maybe you should working with Eric.
No,
but it's
you.
Really yeah.
Last
question. But I mean, since we've been living in different cities, that's 5 years ago that I moved away from The Hague.
Somebody wants me.
Yeah. Okay. Answer your phone.
They're outside. Where are you?
They're waiting for you. Can we finish off? Or
yeah, we can. One last question.
Yeah, sure.
No. Your band?
Our band.
Your band, just?
Okay, I actually have two bands.
You have two bands?
Yeah, I have one really cool band and I have one pretty lousy band.
Tell me about the lousy one, because the cool one I know.
Are you in the lousy band?
No, he's in the cool band.
He's just flattering me.
I'm just sucking his ass.
What?
No, I have a band since about 3/4 of a year, maybe, and we try to rehearse every week, and we have our own songs, and we're a three-piece, guitar, bass, drums, and singing.
And you're singing?
Yeah, as well as the bass player. What else? We're doing our best, but it's really a best effort kind of deal.
And what's the band called?
The band is called Louis, L-U-Y.
Lou.
Which means lazy in Dutch.
Okay.
It's Louis. It's Louis. Louis.
It's Lou.
Yeah? It's as in the French magazine.
And is Eric the manager?
No, Eric is the manager of Wolfram. That's my other band. That's a cool band.
Yes.
That's he's outsourcing the website now, but to.
I'm in touch with
the Indian person.
Be interesting for you, maybe. If you wanna.
No. Okay, Wolfram's the other musical project that I'm involved with, together with our host Donald Beekman. In certain, Donald is called Bakes in certain circles,
Bakes.
And he really hates that.
Hey, Bakes. I don't hate that.
You don't hate
Gunker
that.
Gunker Bakes, really. Berg Eik.
And that's.
Do you have fans? A fan club?
Wolfram seems to have. There are a couple people who actually know a couple of our tracks. And ask for them.
You get
that
requests.
That actually happened. Yeah, we actually got a request the last time we played.
There are people who bring their drum kits to Wolfram gigs.
Yeah. Wolfram is just really, let me explain. I don't know how much airtime Wolfram already had, because you're trying not to talk about yourself all that much, I suppose.
No,
right,
so weird to...
Okay, so Wolfram
I confine myself to my own lectures to talk about myself.
Wolfram is a five-piece band composed of purely of type designers. That's me, Just, and Donald Beekman on bass. Henk Larmers on laptop, the other Donald Roos, Donald Roos on saxophone, and probably soon he has this huge new saxophone that he bought.
Yeah, the big one. Yeah, the baritone,
that's
or even bigger. The bass
baritone, I think. No, I think it's a baritone.
Baritone, yeah. It's a
and Peter Verheul on solo guitar, it's the ace guitar.
And when's the next
Well, the thing is, the last time we played
tour?
Tour, yeah. But the thing is, we still have this CD project which needs to be finished, and I think Henk Larmers isn't talking to me until it's finished. So it sounds a bit like we have bits of infighting in the band. I mean, we're really rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, we're a true band.
After actually. Our first gig, we basically kicked for Donald Rose after out because he refused to go to dinner with us. And then he came back because he's a really nice guy. But
well, somebody's kicked out every rehearsal, basically. So
well, you know, for every new gig, someone proposes to add a drummer. We don't have a drummer, so we only have a laptop. And Henk Larmers is making beats and sounds, so he is basically our drummer. But sometimes someone, and it's always someone else, who proposes, shouldn't we do a project with a real drummer? And then Henk always immediately leaves the band, basically.
He's out of the band.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, we should wrap up.
Yeah, that's yeah. Enough about the band. Thank you.
Thanks.
Time Radio. Now we're talking.